We'd like to invite you to the Escondido United Reformed Church this Sunday for worship. We are committed to preach through the Word of God. We are committed to Reformation theology and the message of salvation by grace alone, through faith alone, in Jesus Christ alone. You can visit us on the web at escondidourc.org. Again, those worship service times are 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. on Sunday. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.
A time of rightly dividing the word of truth. Welcome to Abounding Grace. On behalf of Abounding Grace Ministries, here is our pastor and teacher, Chris Gordon.
Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. I am Pastor Chris Gordon, and we're always grateful to have you tune in to Abounding Grace Radio. Today on Abounding Grace, we're going to go to the Gospel of Matthew and look at Jesus' teaching in parables from Matthew chapter 13, specifically the parable of the sower and the parable of the wheat and tares. And what you're going to hopefully hear as you listen to this program today is the importance of sitting under the preaching of the gospel. I can't emphasize this enough. I hear so many say to me today, well, I don't need the church, or I don't need to go to church. I am the church, and I do my own personal devotions. Listen, God never set it up that way. God set it up. He said from 1 Corinthians that it pleased him to save with the foolishness of the message preached. That is so important. This is why Romans 10 says, how will they hear without a preacher, and how will they preach unless they are sent? So the word needs to be explained. God sends preachers. Not everyone's sent to do that. God raises up preachers, and God sends them, and we have to be good listeners of that. Well, that's what Jesus describes here in Matthew chapter 13. Sadly, however, there are different types of hearers, and the Lord is challenging us here as to what kind of hearer we are. Do we love the word? Do we respond to the word? Is the word having an impact in us? Is there fruit in our lives? And do we understand the nature of the struggle in the kingdom until he comes? We're considering all that today, and this is going to be one of the most important messages, at least I believe that I give on Abounding Grace Radio, because it really does show the condition of the human heart and the need for the Lord to reach in there, implant his word, and give us a new birth so that we would respond in faith and belief in the person and the work of Jesus Christ. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace. You can call us today at 1-888-504-8805. Again, 1-888-504-8805. Do please visit us on the web at agradio.org. You can support us, if you wish, right there online. Again, you can call us at 888-504-8805. We'd love to hear from you. There's a form to fill out online. Do please write to us and tell us how Abounding Grace Radio is a blessing to you. That would encourage us a great deal. Thanks again for tuning in today. Here is the message from Matthew chapter 13 on the parable of the different soils. One of the things that has perplexed me about gospel ministry is how common it is that people don't respond to it, that they don't respond to the gospel. You think about what the Lord is offering to this sad world. He's offering so many wonderful blessings and benefits. He's offering peace. He's extending his arm and he's saying, come to me and I will give you life and forgiveness and deliverance from death. He who believes in me, though he dies, he shall live. He says all these things in the gospel over and over and over, assuring that there is eternal happiness and bliss beyond this life with him. Where are the floods? Where are the people? I mean, have you ever been stuck by that and troubled by that? How many people reside in Escondido today? 150,000. How many do you think will be worshiping this morning? Well, we've got about 30 churches in Escondido. Maybe 3,000 or 5,000.
How many will be responding when they sit there and listen? And what did they get? That is massively confusing for me. Troubles me, bothers me. I mean, think about it. There will be more interest tonight in the Chargers than Christ. Average attendance, 64,000. There's more excitement about throwing around a ball and watch people hit each other than to come hear words that will save you from eternal hellfire. Does that trouble you? At times, the lack of response can become so discouraging. You begin to ask the question about gospel ministry, does it even work? I mean it, does it even work? Is it doing anything right now? You ever question that? Why does it have to be this way? Why all of the opposition? Why all the struggle? You know, I mean, it was great. For the past few weeks, we had two old veterans come up here and preach. They were old veterans, and it was fantastic. I loved listening to them preach, but both of them told you how much the times have changed. Did you hear it? And how the opposition is coming on unprecedented levels. Both of them said it. And you stand back from that. I'm sitting there listening, thinking, couldn't it have been different? Couldn't God have done this differently? Why so little response? And then this struggle is all the more confusing because, I mean, come on. There are stadiums today that are called churches that are filled with 50,000. And man, I could tell you that if you come to Jesus, you're going to be rich. You're going to have everything you ever want. You're going to be happy. He'll heal your cancer. And I would get really paid. Come on. Why does that get allowed? You see, that can all be very disillusioning. You enter into ministry. You want to be an effective preacher. We're all concerned about reaching people. I want everyone saved. I can say that genuinely. I want everyone saved. Here's the reality. If you look at the state of the church, and you talk to the average pastor, most of them are greatly discouraged just by the spiritual state of people. Do you know, as the stats go, at any given time, 75% of pastors want to quit over severe stress, over depression, over fear, over bewilderment, over alienation, among other things, and their spouses the same. Tough business. Any of this work? Does any of this work? Why do I raise that this morning? Because that's the struggle of Matthew chapter 13. That is what Jesus is answering for you in Matthew 13. And you all have felt it. You all have felt it. When you have convictions about things today and you say, I'm going to be reformed in my convictions, all the more you feel alienated because you simply have convictions. That's all it takes today to feel alienated. Conviction, because there isn't much of it. Well, Matthew 13 has two goals this morning. As I was trying to summarize this and beat it down into one statement so that you could take something with you, I believe it's this. Jesus is giving his disciples, who are very perplexed about the nature of the kingdom and how it works, he's giving his disciples hope in explaining what they can expect about the kingdom, and he's explaining for them how they are to look at these kind of disappointments. Hope and help for the disappointments. And we need to understand this, because if you don't, at some point, you all are going to feel like giving up. You're all going to feel disillusioned about this all. You all, even in the course of your own Christianity, are going to feel, is anything even happening? And Jesus' words are designed to give that kind of hope and help in this struggle that I just described, to not lose sight of the fact that there is a goal ahead of us, that there is something ahead of us that is laid out in front of us, that there is, at the end, a great harvest of souls that is coming. That's how these two parables end, didn't it? But you need to understand on the way the nature of the conflict. In the interim, and in this section, what Jesus is doing is helping his disciples with an issue they have not been able to figure out specifically. What is it? It's this. Jesus has been doing signs no one can dispute. I mean, it's been remarkable. He has raised the dead. He has healed the sick. I mean, what kind of following would that get today if Pastor Gordon was able to heal all of your diseases? I'd be a pretty popular guy in Escondido, wouldn't I? What's happened to Jesus? This is what he's doing. He's healing, he's raising the dead. Nobody has ever seen anything like that. No one, when they even heard him preach, everyone said, "What in the world is that? We've never heard anyone teach like that. We've never heard anyone teach like that." He teaches with authority. Prophets all wanted to see his day. But here was the dilemma. Jesus had piles of admirers, but few followers. Where are the followers of him? Imagine the disciples, they're in training, going to be apostles. Where are the followers? This makes no sense. And the key to understanding why then Jesus begins to tell the parable is seen in the events that surround. He's going to tell seven kingdom parables here. And to understand why he's doing this is to look at what happened around it. What happened around it? Well, notice here, the disciples have been discouraged about what? In chapter 12, he had healed a man. And what kind of response did that get? Well, Pharisees come along and they charge him with something that is just unbelievable. This man does not heal except by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons. He healed a man. What an awful response. I mean, you're standing there as disciples. These are the religious leaders of the day. You're standing there thinking, what? Why? What would earn that kind of rage? Now, everyone look down at the end of chapter 13 this morning. And you'll notice there at the very end of chapter 13 in verse 53, that it came to pass after he finished these parables, he comes to his hometown. They're astonished at his wisdom and his teaching and his mighty works, but he comes to verse 57. Notice verse 57. So they were all offended at him. You know, John 6, you remember that? He has 5,000 gather around him, and by the time he's done, they're so mad. Jesus says, have I offended you? How many times do you hear people say, you've offended me, you offended me? Did I offend you? And then he steps it up. It was all unreasonable, of course, the rejection and the rage that he got. But it's confusing for the disciples. It's confusing for the disciples. They don't really understand this. They don't get this. Why in the world is this happening? Well, chapter 13 is Jesus' response to all of this rejection. And if you understand that, then it will make some sense for you why he's doing what he's doing. As the disciples are perplexed here, we come to chapter 13, and here's the scene. As it opens up in chapter 13, we read that he gets into a boat and he has to. He has to get into a boat and he goes out into the water a little ways. I mean, you can kind of imagine it like this. Imagine that I'm on a lake. The masses have gathered all around Jesus. He's on a little pulpit, floating. He has to because the masses are so great, he has to have distance. This is fantastic. You know, if you're a disciple standing there, you've never seen a rabbi draw this kind of attention. You've never seen a teacher get this kind of attention. I mean, this is what the disciples wanted to see. You remember in John 7, look, if you're going to do something, you got to get out there and show yourself to the world. You've got to do these things in front of people so you'll get a following. So imagine the excitement now. Rejection just comes out of it. The masses are all around him. You would look at this today and you'd think, that's great. It's a crusade. They're listening to Jesus himself. This is exciting. Don't ever criticize that. Here's the opportunity. What do you think the disciples are thinking? You've taught us to be fishers of men. You know, here you are in a boat. Here are all, cast the net. Go get them. We're fishers of men. Well, it's at this point that Jesus does something confusing. He begins to speak in parables. He tells a parable of the sower. A sower went out and sowed in his field. He wanted to grow crops. Some landed on the path. The birds come and devour it. Some landed on the, these stony places here. The earth sprung up. The seeds sprung up quick. But because they had no depth of earth, it was scorched by the sun and it withered away. Some grew up, but the thorns choked it so that it didn't produce any fruit. Then there's this one that produced much fruit. Gets off the boat, walks away. Now that should startle you. You ever notice how the explanation is given down the way a little bit in the scriptures? He gets off the boat, gives that parable, walks away. And you're saying, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense. I mean, why would you do that? His disciples come to him. Jesus, we don't understand what you're doing. Why are you speaking to them in parables? You haven't done this. You've changed the tactics. Why are you all of a sudden teaching in parables? That is so perplexing. We're a bit wrong about parables, by the way. We're a bit wrong. We think parables are given to make it nicer and easier for the people and the children. Nuh-uh. Nope. Easy listening. Nope. Parables coded the teaching. He just coded it. You say, why would you code your teaching? Why would you put it in code? Why would you not just say it? He hid it from them right then and there. This is a great teaching moment for his disciples, of course. Remember, it really is a training chapter, and that helps us to understand this. It's a training chapter. Why are you speaking in parables? They don't know what you're talking about, Jesus. Why are you doing that? And listen to verse 11. Because it's been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them, it's not been given. That's a remarkable statement. For to the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor understand. That's why I am doing this. Here were all these multitudes. He doesn't give them meaning. He lets them walk away, and he walks up to his disciples. They want to know why. He then begins to explain to them why he's doing it, and he says something remarkable in verse 16. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. I've done something for you. Have you figured this out yet? I've done something overwhelming for you, dear disciples. Now, I want you again to think a little bit about where the disciples are at this moment. It's probably right where you are right now, trying to figure this out. Why is Jesus doing this? This doesn't seem to make any sense. Why is Jesus responding like this? And then Jesus says something remarkable. I'm fulfilling the prophet Isaiah, and you're seeing it in these people. You're fulfilling that ministry, that seeing they will not see and hearing they will not hear, lest I should heal them. What has happened to cause that? That's my question. Why is he doing that? Well, you can look all over the Gospels and understand this. You can see it. Everyone was following him for the signs. Everyone was coming to him. He was getting all sorts of responses, and here was the problem. Where were the genuine followers? So they're coming out to listen to a great preacher, a preacher like they had never heard before, a preacher that was powerful and nothing but opposition. Why? He's offering grace. He's offering strength. He's saying, come to me and I'll give you help for your lives. And they would still, even though they're there, they'd still rather be down at the Charger game. Does that bother you? Sure, it bothers you. It bothered Jesus. Why are people responding like this to him? I'm now fulfilling Isaiah. They heard, nothing happened, they wouldn't come to him. Now you would all agree at some point you just keep casting it, you don't cast your pearls anymore. That's a biblical principle. At some point you know that you're told to turn away. At some point Jesus turns away. And what we've had in the Gospels are people following him for all the wrong reasons. Some calling him a demon. I mean, calling Jesus, the Son of God, a demon. But the puzzle for us here is this is Jesus. This is the King. Where's the sovereignty? Why is he doing this? The disciples are perplexed. And so at this point, what Jesus does, and this is where it'll come together, I hope, for you this morning. What Jesus does is he begins to open up the kingdom of heaven for them so that with heavenly understanding, they can understand what is going on in the hearts of multitudes of people in the ministry. The parable will be a blessing for them. To him who has more will be given. It will actually reveal more to them. It has a concealing and a revealing function. So here it is. He begins to explain this parable of the sower. This parable was told for them to understand the phenomenon that they had just witnessed, that they had just had an object lesson about with all these people around Jesus and very few responding. So Jesus explains it. Let me help you with your understanding about what's going on in the kingdom, in my kingdom rule, in my sovereignty as the King of kings and Lord of lords. He begins to explain this. Hear the parable of the sower. What we find in the parable of the sower is that this was a word picture, if you will, in a parable form, of the earthly preaching of the gospel and the word going out into the earth. The soils represent the heart. The seed is the word of God. And this gets to the issue. The word is going to have an effect in people's hearts depending upon the state of people's hearts when they receive it. That's what's going to happen. How is the word going to have an effect on people's hearts? The word today God is sending out on this day around the world today. Well, he starts and he explains this. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. So the first kind of response Jesus says to my ministry, to my casting the word on this dry soil of the earth, is this. There are a whole bunch who are totally unresponsive. Totally unresponsive. That's the first type of hearer he raises here. When a farmer would cast his seed, some inevitably would fall on dirt that was so matted down. You've seen this. Or on a path. And the dirt was so matted down, it had no place for the seed to break into the soil, begin to grow. Jesus says, there are multitudes of hearts just like that. Notice he says, when they hear it, there's no understanding. What kind of heart is Jesus describing? It's a calloused, it's a critical, it's a very hard heart that translates to no interest really to this at all. It doesn't have the ability to. And I believe what Jesus is saying here is that there are those in the kingdom when they hear my word, their hearts are so incredibly hard to anything spiritual, so hard, absolutely right out of the gates, it's rejected. They're gone. No response. You've seen this all your life. You realize how people hear the word? Jesus was talking about it over and over. Take heed how you hear. Take heed what you hear. You're used to talking about the preacher and how the preacher did that day. But you should also equally talk about how you heard that day. And I believe that Jesus here is pressing and showing them what he's been facing in his own ministry. Now, this is not surprising to you. Secular songwriters write about this stuff all the time. In fact, my guess is you've drove down in your car and you've sung this song, and this secular writer has called you a fool. Did you know that? Listen to this. Simon and Garfunkel's song, The Sound of Silence, for all you oldies but goodies. In the naked light, I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share, and no one dared disturb the sound of silence. Fool, said I. You've been in your car singing that, by the way. You do not know silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell and echoed in the wells of silence. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. Unreal. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said, the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls and whispered in the sound of silence. You know what he said the meaning of that song was? His own words? The inability of people to listen and communicate so that they can't love one another. Well, that's what the disciples have been seeing the whole time with Jesus. He's been speaking heavenly speech. He's been speaking saving speech. Who's listening? Who's listening today in the world to Jesus?
Well, we're going to have to stop there. Tomorrow we'll come back to part two of that message taken from Matthew chapter 13 on the parable of the sower. It's so important that we understand that parable. We would love for you to visit us on the web. Download that very podcast free of charge at agradio.org. You can also call us at 1-888-504-8805. Again, 1-888-504-8805. agradio.org is the website. Thanks so much for tuning in to Abounding Grace. Until next time, may this gospel of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in all of its glory continue to richly bless you.